There are a lot of people in the room. Do you guys know that this is not the keynote?
Yeah, we won't have skydivers. We won't give away devices.
Won't we? We are actually, we are giving away something to everybody in the room and online. Information.
We think. And we have five special guests today. We don't know what they're going to do yet. I was thinking maybe they could do some of our slides so we can, you know, rest our voices. Yeah. Or maybe answer the questions at the end, so we'll see.
So on with the talk. When we submit titles and abstracts for talks at a conference like this, it's so far in advance that A, we don't really know what we're going to talk about, and B, we don't really know what we will be releasing by that time. So we submit very generic titles. But what we really meant by what's new in Android is... What's new in Jelly Bean?
I'd like to point out that once again, the web got it wrong. It wasn't Android 5. It's 4.1.
Where are you getting your insider information? It is bad. So, a lot of stuff going on in Jelly Bean. Some of it was implementation details, like working on performance, the butter stuff that we heard about in the keynote. We'll talk about a little bit of that. There was a lot of work on new framework features and methods and capabilities, some graphics and media stuff. There was significant work in the notifications area, and we're going to have Dan Sandler from that team join us on stage later to talk in detail about that. And also, there's ongoing work in the SDKs and tools that are coming out all the time. So we'll touch on some of the highlights there. In the performance area, it's all about butter. It's about creating a buttery, smooth experience for the user. And this is basically about speeding up performance, but it's also about things like triple buffering to allow the different components in the system to work in parallel, to make things faster for you. It's also about keying things off of VSync so that we're actually doing things at the right time and consistently. And then it's also about simply speeding up our stuff and making sure that we're not doing too much. There's a lot more information about what we did and what you can do to take advantage of it in the session that we're doing tomorrow afternoon entitled For Butter or Worse.
So tomorrow afternoon session is this single slide, except we talk for 1 hour about the slide.
Really slowly. There was a lot of work in the widgets and wallpapers space, especially widgets. It's now possible for you to host your widgets in your third-party launcher application, if you have one, through a new bind intent. It's also possible for you to react to size changes. So you'll actually see this on the Nexus 7. You can see it in some of the play widgets that are on the screen, on the home screen by default. If you resize the widgets, which was a new capability in ICS, now you can actually react to that change, and you can change the layout on the fly to make things look better. So in ICS, the widget could be resized, but you didn't actually know your widget was being resized, so you couldn't do anything dynamic with the views in the widget. So now you can. So that's good. There's new capabilities of bundling both horizontal and vertical layouts in the same remote view so that we can react more quickly to a screen rotation without asking for that information to be sent over again. There's also capabilities for new layouts. So grid layout is a new layout that came out in ICS that allows you much more capabilities and is much more performant for certain situations. It avoids the problems of deeply nested layout layers, and that layout is now available to you for widgets as well as the view stub layout. And finally, in the wallpaper space, if you have a live wallpaper that you want people to use from your application, you can launch the wallpaper picker from your application with this new intent.
Yeah, if you distribute a live wallpaper on market, you don't have to create, you know, that fake app anymore that when you launch it says, tells the user, please go back to launcher, open the menu, go do that. Now you can do it right away directly from your own application.
In the animation space, which I care deeply about, so there was a new animation package that was introduced in 3.0, and we've been adding minor enhancements to it since then. In 3.2, we added a new class called View Property Animator that made it even easier to launch animations on specific properties of views, like the alpha property and translation and rotation and scale, sort of canonical views that you properties that you would change for animations like fading views in and out. And View Property Animator was all about creating a very simple syntax for you to use to basically set the property, but then it would animate to that property value instead of just setting it atomically. So we added some minor things in this release that make it a little bit easier. First, a review, since maybe not everyone in the room has actually used the API so far. So, for instance, you can fade a view out by saying, I want to animate, which gives you a view property animator object, and I want to set the alpha value to 0, which causes that animator to run and animate to that value instead. Or you can set a translation value, and it'll automatically go there. If you run several of these in sequence, it'll sort of stack them up and then eventually start them on the next frame. Or you can simply chain the operations together. So the code on line 5 is actually equivalent to the code on line 1 and line 3, just chained together in the same statement. So all of that stuff already existed in Android 3.2. What we have new in this release is the ability to animate with layers. So the best practice for animating, especially these view properties for complex views or complex view hierarchies, is to enable a hardware layer before you run the animation, then when the animation is finished, disable the hardware layer so that you're not taking up that memory overhead after the animation is done. Well, there's sort of boilerplate code that you have to go through every time you do that, so we simplified that because that's what view property animator is all about. So you simply call with layer as part of the animation command, and it'll automatically build the layer, run the animation, and disable the layer when it's done. There's also start action and end actions, makes it easier to sequence view property animator animation. So you can say, for example, when this animator finishes running, I want the following runnable to kick in, which may spawn another animation, or it may remove the view that was faded out or slid off the screen or whatever. All about simplifying animations in general, because we figure if we can make them as easy to use as possible, then you don't need to think about them, and you can make your application richer without spending a lot of time on this stuff. You can actually focus on the core logic instead. Finally, in the layout transition class, which was also introduced in Android 3.0, the layout transition class was introduced to make it easier to animate, to automatically animate any changes to views that were inside a particular container. So you set a layout transition on a container, and when views are added or removed or shown or hidden, then we would automatically fade things out, in or out, and move things around to sort of animate the changes and create a nice segue for the user. In this release, we introduced the new ability to enable a new transition type called changing, and it'll react to any layout change. So instead of simply animating the change to fade a view out and move the children around to close the gap, we can react to any change. So if one of those views actually changes layout parameters and then does a request layout, we'll note that internally and run an animation automatically for you with basically one line of code.
And we had a great demo for you to show you this,
yes,
this new API.
It was awesome.
But Chet forgot to install the demo on his phone, and he left his laptop at my place this morning, so we don't have a demo for you.
Computers, they're so confusing, don't you think?
So the framework, we won't go into all the new APIs and all the changes we've introduced in the framework. I just wanted to mention a few that are particularly interesting. You can look at the API diff that's part of the SDK on the site that just launched this morning. The first one to me is pretty important because we keep giving talks about performance and how you should use less memory and how your application should go faster. Well, we do work in the framework to make that happen automatically for you. And one of the components that we focused on in Jelly Bean is the text view. Text view is one of the most common components in applications. I've seen applications with hundreds and hundreds of text views. Every button is a text view, every label, every input field. So they use less memory, they're faster, therefore they're better. We also improved our clipboard API. If you use the clipboard API, it was pretty limited in terms of what kind of text you can transfer between applications. So now you can transfer rich text. So you can keep your bold and italics and all the spans that you can use with TextView. We also worked really hard on better memory management. This is something we started with Gingerbread and ICS and Jelly Bean. We kept working on that, and we're exposing more APIs that you can use in your application to react to the current state of the system and free some memory if you can do that. And those APIs are actually what we use internally all over the place. For instance, the hardware rendering pipeline that we've introduced in Android 3 uses those new APIs to free up OpenGL memory when you switch back and forth between applications to keep the device in a really good state. I also wanted to remind you of two new widgets that we've introduced in ICS. So we didn't talk about ICS at the last Google I.O. There's the brand new layout called Grid Layout. How many of you have used Grid Layout? Okay, that's not too many. Grid Layout is now part of the support library, so you can use it all the way back to, I don't remember, maybe Froyo or Donut, something like that. And so Grid Layout you can use to replace table layouts, relative layouts. You can create really complex UIs. in a really easy way, and it will be highly performant. So I really encourage you to try that layout. We also have texture view. You've seen this demo this morning during the keynote in the new camera application. You can swipe back and forth between the pictures you've taken and the camera. And you could see the camera, you had the live preview of the camera running while it was panning around. You cannot do that with surface view. The way you do it now is with texture view. Texture view is a surface view that can react to all the new properties we introduced. So you can apply translucency, you can apply rotation, scales, color filters, all kinds of stuff. And finally, I wanted to show you a small code sample. You can now cancel database queries. So in this example, we have a content resolver, and we want to query all the contacts on the device. This is usually a query that takes quite a bit of time, and if you want your app to remain reactive and you want to react really quickly to the user input, you want to be able to cancel queries from time to time. So what you do is you create a new cancellation signal object on which you can install a listener, and the listener will be invoked when or if you cancel the query. And then when you do your query, you just pass that signal, so just one more parameter, and that works with the new loaders, that works with cursors and content resolvers. And finally, when you're ready to cancel the query, you just call cancel on the signal. So it's a very easy-to-use API that you can really benefit from in your applications. Something else we introduced in Jelly Bean. Can we switch to the device, please? So we have new animations to give you a better sense of where you are in the system. So for instance, here, if I launch the messaging application, you can see that the activity starts from that icon. And we do the same in the list of recent applications. So if I click on messaging again, you can see that the animation starts from that position on the screen. Can you switch back to the slides, please? So we introduced a new API that lets you implement those animations yourself in your application. Can you show the slides, please? The slides? Yeah. Thank you. It's a new class called Activity Options. It's very simple, very easy to use. So you create a new instance. For instance, here we call make scale up animation. So this is the animation we just saw, but you can create your own animations. You can go crazy fancy with that. And in this particular case, we specified the anchor view. So in the case of Launcher, the anchor view is the icon of the application that we're clicking. And then you specify the coordinates of the start position of the animation relative to that view. So we want to start at 0, 0, and we want the activity to start at the same size as the view that you just clicked. From that, you can get a bundle, and you can pass this bundle to the method startActivity, and we will automatically play the animation for you, and you will get this seamless experience going back and forth between activities. Navigation, we added in the framework tools that you already had in the support library, so we have two new tools. We have the Task Stack Builder, and we have automatic support for up navigations. So let's see. Yes, so the automatic app navigation. So now with the action bar, you have the home icon in the top left of your application. When you click on it, you're supposed to go up and not back. So we have documents, you know, on the developer website that explain the difference and all the guidelines and the best practices for this. But you had to write a little bit of code. So now instead, in your manifest, you just add a new attribute called parent activity name, and you just point to the activity that you want to go back to when you click that little icon. You can do the same in the support library. It requires a few extra lines of code inside the application. I think it's a couple more lines. And it's not an attribute. It's a metadata tag. But the feature is exactly the same.
There's also a session on navigation at Google I.O. this year, later this week. So you might want to check that out for best practices and more particular examples.
And the Task Stack Builder is a very simple API that solves an issue that we've had for a long time on Android. You might have seen that happen when you click a notification, for instance, and then you press the back key. So you click on a notification, the app shows up, and you press the back key, and it's very unclear where you're going back to. Sometimes you will have something in the stack, sometimes you won't. So it's very confusing for the users. With the Task Stack Builder, what you can do is you can recreate your own stack. So usually what will happen is when you click on a notification and you bring your application, you can recreate the exact stack you want behind the activity that you're showing so that the interaction by the user is exactly what they expect. So in this particular example, we just want to create a backstack back to our home activity. And as you can see, you can insert your own intents and you can insert your own extras just like you would with a normal intent.
One of the things that we wanted to do in this release was make the APIs and toolability of the framework a little more consistent. For the most part, there are properties that are available in XML that are also available on the Java language side. But in some cases, they weren't. Either the attribute name would be slightly different, or there would be a setter on the Java language side, or there would not be either a setter or a getter. And so we sort of went through, we did a laundry list of, you know, here are the things that are mismatched. How can we make these better? And this is about understanding and having your expectations met by the API, but it's also about tools being able to find the property setters and getters that they expect for particular XML attributes. And that, all of that stuff makes the platform more toolable and therefore easier to build your applications.
Well, it also makes the APIs more consistent and...
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. So here's a couple of examples. I think you get what I mean. But for instance, there was an XML attribute called scroll bar size that didn't have either a setter or a getter. So you could set it on the XML side, but you couldn't actually query what
it
was.
And I have to point that out. It was entirely my fault, this particular one. So my bad.
So shame on him.
I was an intern at the time.
So we added the setter and getter that were required. Also, with max width, we actually had a setter already, but we didn't have a getter, so the tool couldn't find out what the current value was or the user at the programming level, so we added the getter there. Moving on. So internationalization in this release was all about, wait for it, right to left.
Chet is very proud of this animation.
I worked all day on it.
And also because that word at the top is one of the few words in the English language that I just cannot pronounce, I'm going to pronounce it.
Internationalization, I'll translate for him.
I'm going to pronounce it in French, internationalisation. It's pretty much the same word. But, you know, it works with that slide. So they talked about it during the keynote. We've added 18 new locales, and we're trying to address the number one bug on our external bug tracker, support for Arabic. So we have much better support to display and edit Arabic text, well, right-to-left text, so Arabic and Hebrew mostly. We're still working on it. It's still not quite ready, but it's much, much better, and we're shipping the UI with those locales. And really, for your applications as developers, we implemented that in a way that you should not have to worry about it. So if you use the Canvas API, it's taken care of for you. If you're using TextView, EditText, or any of our text APIs, it's taken care of for you, so you have nothing to do. If you're writing OpenGL code, good luck with that. But we'd like to make it better as well for OpenGL. And, of course, performance improvements. In ICS, we had big performance problems. If you had long, long right-to-left text in Gmail, for instance, when composing an email, and we addressed that. So this is just a couple of screenshots. On the left, you can see our UI in Arabic. On the right, you can see the same UI in Hebrew. Again, nothing to do. The app just works.
There's a lot of work done in accessibility. We had accessibility before. We could read out what was on the screen, but there was kind of a trick to it. You needed to know where the view was on the screen to be able to hover over it. It was kind of a puzzle to try to figure out what the UI was.
Which is a crime when you cannot see the screen.
So apparently that wasn't really what people were looking for. So we added a lot more capabilities here. And the most important thing to point out is there's a whole talk on accessibility this week. So please tune into that talk if you want all the details. But at a very high level view, we added the ability to receive these global gestures that can basically walk through all of the views and all the information on the screen. So you can swipe left and swipe right and proceed through all the views in the hierarchy in a linear fashion. So basically, you don't need to know where it is on the screen. You can just go left to right, right to left, and find what you're looking for. And when there's accessibility focus on an object, then you can simply double tap without knowing where on the screen you actually have to double tap, and it will launch that item, whatever it is. There's also the ability to read through text at different layers, so you can read by character or word or line or paragraph. And there's also the ability to give us more information about custom views. So for the most part, all of this is handled for you, right? All the views, you can get to them with the gestures. But maybe there's a complex view like the calendar view that we have in the apps that we ship on the platform where, yes, it's a single view, but it has very structured semantic information in it that's important to propagate to the user through accessibility. Well, then you can actually implement this method to give us more information that we need in order to traverse that sort of subview level of information. As I said, it just works for standard views, but there are special cases that you may have where we don't think maybe a layout is important, but you do for your particular application, so you can give us more information about it. And then finally, a lot of this capability was also folded into the support library. And again, go to that other session if you want more information about it.
Oh, that's a fun one.
It is. We added a new permission called read external storage, and we want all developers to start using this permission if you need access to external storage. So start using it now. We do not require this permission now, but in a future release, we will. So it'd be good if you actually started using it now so that when we do require it, your application will simply work. In the meantime, you can use the developer options category of settings to actually force us to pay attention to this permission so you can test whether your application uses the permission correctly. We had the ability already to limit downloads in your application depending on whether the user was on Wi-Fi versus mobile, but this is a very coarse-grained approach to whether the user was actually paying for the bandwidth. What if they're on Wi-Fi, but they're actually on Wi-Fi on a metered hotspot, like they're tethering to their Jelly Bean phone, and they're actually paying for that bandwidth? Well, we have ways of detecting that in some situations, like tethering to a Jelly Bean Galaxy Nexus phone, but there are other situations where the user can actually provide that information to us through the data usage settings. They can actually tell us which hotspots are metered or not, and by paying attention to this capability, then you will know in your application whether you're on a metered network and whether you should delay downloading that huge data block to your user at this time.
So we kept working on RenderScript, especially the compute part. We now have support for Neon instructions. So for those of you who don't know, Neon is an instruction set in ARM CPUs that lets you help you parallelize instructions. So it's really great if you want to do heavy data processing algorithms. Unfortunately, Neon floating points are not compatible with the typical floating points that you use in your day-to-day programming languages. So it's an opt-in. You have to add this new Pragma instructions at the beginning of your script if you want to benefit from it, because it might break your application. In most cases, it shouldn't, so you can give it a try and see if it works. We've also added a few things. You can now sample textures just like you would do in a fragment shader on the GPU, and we've added support, debugging support on x86 devices. There will be a talk tomorrow after hours called Doing More with Less, and there will be more examples of RenderScript and how you can use it to speed up data processing.
There was a lot of capabilities added in the media space, especially at the layer of getting more information about the underlying codec and media that you're actually playing. I'm going to defer real information to the session. If you want to know more about this, go to the Media Codec APIs talk. That's this afternoon.
That's because he read through the APIs and he had no idea how they worked.
I said, can you give me an overview? And they sent me code, mass amounts of code. I'm like, wow, there's a lot of stuff there. How about you talk about it instead of me?
But there's a lot of, if you use audio in your application, I know there's a lot of very interesting stuff, so you should go to that session as well.
Speaking of audio, there was a lot of work done on audio latency, which I know is a serious issue to a lot of you. There was a lot of very significant improvements. However, a lot of the improvements tend to be device-specific, so we're not done yet. We're just going to say, hey, things got a lot better, and they should get even better going forward. NFC, we heard about this in the keynote already. There's a great capability to basically connect through NFC, but then actually do a download of a large file rather than through NFC, which really wasn't intended for this massive amount of data. Do it through Bluetooth instead. It's very easy to connect devices in this way, and it's also very easy to do tap-to-pair, again, connecting with Bluetooth devices. There's interesting details about how easy this is, and again, I will defer that to another talk that's happening this week, tomorrow afternoon. So go to the Up Close and Personal talk.
So Google Play, we introduced a bunch of new features on Google Play over the past few months, and I just wanted to talk about a couple that are particularly interesting. So you can now finally respond to user comments. So this is now, for now, well, a few people are happy. So not all of you can do it right now. It's only for the top user, the top developers, or whatever it's called. You have this little blue badge that shows up. But based on the feedback, it's going to open up to more and more developers as time goes by. We've also added the ability to subscribe to content in applications, so in-app subscription. So here we have the example of Frontlight Commando by Glue Mobile, and you can see it's the same flow as in-app purchases, and it will automatically go through Google Wallet, you know, like every month you will be credited for your content. And of course, there's way more. You saw some of it during the keynote. I'm particularly excited about the Android expansion files. I've seen a few games already use it. It's great because If you have an application that needs to download a lot of data, and mostly it's games, right? You launch the game for the first time and you see, please wait while we download all your data. Well, you have to pay for the bandwidth, you have to pay for the servers, or at least you had to, and now it's not true anymore. And I was talking with game developers yesterday, and one of them told us that they reduced their cost by 96% by switching to the expansion files. So it can be really, really useful if you need a lot of data. Optimized APK updates, once again, they talked about it in the keynote, but very important, you can update your applications more often because the downloads will be a lot smaller. And the average, I believe, is about 66% saving per download. And of course, we have a bunch of unlocked devices that you can now buy on Google Play. I guess you don't need those devices, at least for those of you in the room, because you just got a bunch of new devices today. Lucky you. If you want to know more about Google Play, there is a session tomorrow afternoon. We also launched a new developer website, brand new design, and we tried to re-architecture the content so that it will be easy to find. So we have three categories. We have the design category, where you find the Android design guidelines. This is something that we launched a few months ago. And if you don't know about it, you should take a look at it. It will show you how you should design your UI for Android, starting with Android 4.0 ICS and forward. The second category is developed, so that's the content that you are used to. You have all the references to the APIs, you have all the articles that we had on the website before, so how to optimize your application, how to use Bluetooth, and so on and so forth. And the last one is dedicated to Google Play, so if you're new to Android and you want to know how can I make money with an app, how can I put it on Google Play, there's a section dedicated to that. We added a lot more stuff in tools. The emulator got a lot better, so now we have x86 virtualization. We don't emulate ARM anymore if you choose to. So the emulator is a lot faster. You can actually play games, and they run pretty well even on the laptop. We also added support for OpenGL. So if you use OpenGL ES1 or OpenGL ES2, or if you want to test hardware acceleration inside your application, you can now do so in the emulator. So it's a great way for you to test the new features that we added in Android ICS and up. And finally, they will talk more about it, but we have the ability to emulate sensors and multi-touch using a physical Android device. So you have your phone, you use a USB cable, you plug it in, and then the phone can send all the data to the emulator. So you can run your application in the emulator at different screen sizes, but you can still emulate the sensors and multi-touch very easily. There's a lot more about tools. We're introducing a bunch of new tools, for instance, Tracer for OpenGL ES. If you use OpenGL, it's a very cool tool. Device Monitor is pretty much a replacement for DDMS. It's a better UI. It also integrates HARQ viewer and various tools. And SysTrace. SysTrace we'll talk about tomorrow. And if you want to know more, there's a talk tomorrow about tools. You should definitely go. ADT, the biggest new feature for me and a lot of you as well, is the better support for the NDK. So you can now debug your applications inside NDK applications, so native code inside ADT. And now we'd like to invite Dan Sandler on stage, Dr. Dan Sandler, because he has a PhD. He's smart.
Dan, I'd like you to meet the guest panelist. Guest panelist, this is Dan.
Nice to meet you. Good to see the piano gallery. Thank you.
And Dan will take over and tell you more about the new notifications that we've introduced in Jelly Bean.
I have a PhD in hurting you later, so we'll just talk about that.
Yeah, he told us to not call him Dr. Dan, so of course I had to.
Hi, everybody. Thank you, guys. My name is Dan Sandler. I'm on the System UI team for Android. I'm the technical lead for the notifications. Here you go. Thank you. Let's see. Go ahead and get started. So this is the notifications API that you know and love, and we pretty much had since the beginning, since API 1. The two key slots here of interest are the icon, which goes in the status bar, and the view that you can pull down and examine from the status bar in the shade. We added some new stuff in Gingerbread to let you launch an activity alongside your notification so that you could have the notification system take care of your sounds and everything, but present a full-screen UI. That's the full-screen intent. In Honeycomb, we added some extra stuff to let you show nice large avatars and things like that in notifications. But basically, the API has remained largely the same, except I will say for the icon guidelines, we have changed those a few times. I apologize. You can send me your bills for your latte-sipping designers. In Jelly Bean, API 16, the new API surface is deceptively small. We're just adding two new things here. We've got a big content view. We'll talk about that. We've got a priority slot. We'll talk about that, too. And one other thing I'm really happy to say, there are no new icon guidelines for you. Wait for a pause. There it is. Good. You guys didn't leave me a lot of time, so we'll keep moving. Let's talk about priority. It's an int, just an int, not all that scary. There aren't even that many choices, so don't get wild here, just five of them. We'll talk about these buckets in a second, but first let me tell you that this is just a hint to System UI. This is a way for you in your app to tell us how urgent you think this notification is, how much of the user's attention we should try to grab here. And with that information, System UI may change the appearance or position of your notification accordingly. So, congratulations, you can finally stop using ongoing notifications to jam your stuff to the top. You can actually specify that request in a first-class way using priority. You can also now create notifications that don't even show up in the status bar at all. Why would you want to do this? If you had a notification that you didn't want to actually steal the user's attention, but if you happen to be in the notification shade anyway, here's some information you might want to know. I call these opportunistic notifications. You can do those now with the very lowest priority. The icon won't show up at the top, but the view will show up inside the notification panel. Thanks, Mom. So here are the priority buckets we were talking about. Most notifications are going to fall right in the middle, high default, low. This is a great way for you if, for example, you ran a massive scaled cloud-based email service that knew that some emails were more important than others. You might use the priority bit to express that in your notification, and then we would be able to show it inside the System UI. You can also imagine that SMS, chat, things of that nature would be higher priority if you have an app that you know has a lot of notifications. So-and-so has added you to their circles. I'm not naming names. You could make that a little bit lower. You would use a maximum priority for something that actively requires the user's attention right now. Somebody is calling you. Somebody is trying to hang out with you. There's a typhoon in your area. That's what max is for. And min, as we talked about, is for these opportunistic notifications, situations where I don't want to take your attention, but if I already have it, you might want to know about this kind of thing. So a calendar event that's long in the past, but you might want to know that you completely spaced on that. Suggestions, some additional detailed, fussy, nerdy status things, which I love, or promotions for in-app purchases would be a great candidate to put into the minimum priority bucket. If you don't know what to do, leave it at the default. We'll take care of the rest as we always have. Let's talk about big content view. I don't know how to tell you this, but it's kind of a big deal. The first major new notifications feature, in my opinion, since 1.0. We're really excited about it. So the content view, it's a remote view slot on notification. It works the same as it always has. It's 64 dips tall, which we instituted as the standard in Honeycomb. We call that 1U. The reason why will be obvious later. And you can continue to use notification.builder to create this. You are using notification.builder, right? You're not still using set latest event info. Good. I'm glad to hear that. The 1U notification will continue to show your small icon, the large icon, content text, title, when, count, all this great stuff packed into one very small, easy-to-read, tidy little package. And big content view is just like content view, but bigger. It goes up to 4 times the size of the original notification. We call that a 4U, but you don't have to use all that space. Essentially, whatever you want to specify in the layout, or we'll talk about using the platform to help you with that. It's a really big canvas for you to do whatever you think is going to be most meaningful to the user. You can put text in there, icons, buttons of the sort that we pioneered in Honeycomb with the music player notification. And the platform is here to help you fill all that space in a way that looks great on Android. We have new platform APIs to make great-looking big notifications, or, as always, we continue to allow you to specify your own remote views because sometimes you guys think of great things that we have not even considered, so you can have every single one of those pixels if you really need it. The first one I want to talk about, the first of these new platform features to help you fill that space, are notification actions. Boy, Hiroshi looks good there. So you can add up to 3 buttons right at the bottom of a notification. So they go outside of the 1U space that automatically bumps you into having a big content view using additional space in the notification panel. You can use this with any notification, and the point here is to allow a user to get something done right there, right from the panel, without changing context. So one of the ways you might want to use this is to visit a different activity. So, for example, if I missed a call here, the callback button doesn't take me to my call log, but it actually puts me right in the dialer. You guys hopefully saw that in the demo next door. You can also use this action system to take some kind of action in the background, to say, I want to snooze this calendar event for 10 minutes. You don't actually need to go to calendar. You don't need to do anything else. You press a button, and it's done. +1 is another great example. You press it, and then you're back in the app where you were. And a little pro tip here for you is that to show that you've already taken an action, you can actually go back and update the notification and either change the icon or even set the intent to be null, and we'll actually replace that button with what we call a tombstone, which is just a sort of a disabled state of the same button to show the user, yes, I heard your click, you can leave the notification panel now. And on the right here, I want to indicate that we've got some sample text, sample code to show you how this kind of thing is built. So far, the top five or six lines are notification builder APIs that you know and love already. We've got a couple of add action lines at the end that represent the new API surface. It's very small. Give us an icon. Give us some text. I'm sorry it's not localized here. It's just a slide. And then a pending intent, just like your content intent would be for your notification. The next thing I want to show you is big text style. And this is the first of the notification styles. These are helper classes that assist the notification builder in making a big content view that properly showcases the information in your notification. So this is the simplest of them. It's pretty straightforward. It's a big text view that fills up as much space as you need to show potentially an entire email or an entire SMS, which is a huge time saver because you don't need to necessarily go to the app anymore. Particularly if you add actions, now somebody could look at that information and then take action, again, without leaving their context, without leaving the app that they were in when they pulled down the shade. A tip here is that you can use the same string for your content text in the small and the large notification, because in the one U form, it's one line and ellipsized, and in the big content view form, it is wrapped and shown in its entirety. So you can see down here the API surface is this set style method on notification.builder. Which allows you to specify one of these style objects where you stuff in even more information, and the platform takes care of the rest. Moving on, I want to show you big picture style. This is just a presentation tip. If you can fit in a photo by Romain, it will make your presentation look outstanding. If you can fit in a picture of Romain, even better. So this one is pretty obvious. It's great for any time you have a lot of visual content, a graph, a photograph, an illustration, a slide. You supply your own bitmap, just like the large icon, and we'll center crop it, slap it in the notification shade, and show it to the user. The aspect ratio is about 2:1, because that's what pretty much fits into the 4U there when you subtract out the top and subtract out the action buttons, if you have them. If you specify more than about 450 dips, which is the widest notification panel that I'm aware of, you're just going to waste space. You're just going to waste RAM, because as long as that notification is sitting there in the panel, somebody's got to be holding onto that memory, and that's me. So don't make me waste the user's memory. Here's another bit of sample code, and again, pretty straightforward. Set style, create a new big picture style, stuff a bitmap in there, and you're good to go. Here's inbox style, another piece of the platform. It is great anytime you have a list of messages, a list of headlines, a calendar agenda, or even if you have an app that has a lot of notifications you want to batch together into one aggregate. This is a great way to show that off, and it's just a bunch of lines. But it really is incredibly powerful when you are pulling down your notification shade. You see your top three emails, and you can put that shade away knowing that you don't even need to go into your email application to consider them. It's super powerful. You can use styled text in each of these. You can use styled text in big text view as well, and big text style as well. In order to separate, for example, here we're using bold and white text to set off the sender from the subject in these emails. It's a great way to provide a little visual interest and provide a little bit of structure as well. We also have a separate line here, and actually all of these large templates have this summary text line that you can use. It's particularly useful in something like inbox style, where you want to say, this is the account which these messages belong to. There's not really another good spot to put it, so we have an additional line there at the bottom. And that's, in fact, where you'll see a lot of the other pieces of the standard 1U template that don't always fit into inbox style, so you can see that the number here is shown at the right of new messages. It's very handy. So those are the pieces of the platform API to help you create great new big notifications. And so the next question is, how does the user get to see these things? Well, you saw in the demo that the top notification is always expanded for the user, but we have some other ways for the user to get there. Hugo showed off the two-finger pull-down. We also explored a two-finger spread horizontally, the old two-finger stretch vertically, and something I call the screwdriver, which is a weird little twisting thing, like you're trying to put a flathead screwdriver into the side of a can of paint to pop off the lid. We tried them all. Pull-down worked really well, given the real estate of a notification. It's a very small hit rectangle, but you can get both your fingers on there pretty easily. However, all these are supported. So if somebody walks up to a device and really hasn't seen this talk, they can try kind of whatever, and it's probably going to work. So as you saw in the keynote, we do expand the topmost notification by default if it can be expanded. And this is another way that users who don't know about these gestures are going to still get some of the benefits of these great expanded notifications. That top one is going to be expanded for you right there. Remember, we talked about priority and how the system UI might actually change position of notifications based on priority. Well, if you combine putting the most important stuff at the top with expanding the topmost thing, now we know that for most users in most situations, you're going to have the most detail about the most important thing right in front of you as soon as you pull down the notification shade. It's very cool. In fact, as you saw during the demo, if you keep swiping away the top notification, the next one will pop up to the top like a cafeteria tray and expand itself. It's a great way to sort of skim through your notifications in detail. One last thing that we added to the platform, and I'm very excited about, is that you can long press any notification in the notification panel and get a little pop-up that says app info. And if you tap on that, it will take you to settings in the app details page. You will now be able to figure out which package posted which notification. This is really, really useful for users so that you can understand where these notifications are coming from if it's not immediately obvious. From that page, of course, you can uninstall packages, as that app details page has always been able to do. There's also now a checkbox where you can simply disable notifications from any package, leaving it otherwise untouched. So if you have a package, you say, I don't like the notifications coming in this app, you turn it off. The corollary for the people in this room is don't make your users do that. Don't annoy your users, because now they can find your package. I have some examples here that I'd like to show. You saw a lot of great examples from our apps in the keynote and in these slides. But we've also been working with a few third parties on Jelly Bean and on the Nexus 7, and they're super excited about these features as well. And so I've got a bunch of screenshots to show you from some of our third parties who've been working on this. I got these screenshots from Foursquare. I'm very excited about these. They do a great job of showing just enough surface area of the app inside the notification panel to let you interact with Foursquare in a great way without leaving your context. You can do friends, you can like check-ins, and do check-ins, things like that, all from the notification panel. Here's one from a couple of music players. We've got Spotify and TuneIn. Each of them is showing you a great big music player in the expanded notification, not just with the standard transport controls, but with buttons to allow you to favorite a song or skip to another channel and things like that. Again, if you're using the device and you want to, you know, skip to another channel, it's great to not have to switch out of your current app to do so. And so I'm very excited to see these things once they're in the field. Here are some screenshots from Pulse. Now, the top one from Pulse, as you can see, looks pretty much like a standard big picture notification. I, in fact, believe that this is, and yet it looks great in this situation. They've got a headline there and the two action buttons, but what I think really shines is that bottom one where they're doing a custom remote views. Anyone who's used Pulse knows that this is their trademark UI, these square tiles that they use to encapsulate a title and a photograph from each of their articles. And so pulling down the notification panel, you get the Pulse experience right there in, what is that, 3U, something like that? Yeah, it looks outstanding. Here are some screenshots that we got from GigBeat. This is a sort of an expansion of the big picture theme. As you can see, they've got four actions there, and we only allow three, so already they're breaking out of boundaries here, and it's a great way to get access to this information, again, without leaving your app. Here's one from Path that I really like because it's almost big picture, but instead of two actions down here, they've got an action and then this little multiple mood selector thing. I think this is great because it looks just like platform controls, and yet you can, from this spot, provide very fine-grained feedback to the app and to your friends. It's very cool. And finally, as an example of how you can really just do whatever you want with the remote views, here's one that we got from Pocket Gems. I haven't even seen this game. I don't know what it does, but it looks exciting. I'm very excited to see what this is, and they've got great, you know, large photos and their own custom buttons in a way that matches their application's look and feel. Let's pull this together. All the way back to, I went back doing research looking for screenshots and notifications from the beginning of time and went back to pre-1.0 SDKs. The M3 SDK had this great UI that you can see at the right there. And there was a quote in the API docs that said, the idea of notifications, this is the first time anybody had ever seen Android notifications, the idea is to be as unobtrusive as possible while still showing the user information that you want them to see. This is still true today, even with all this new great API surface, all these great new devices, and all these new form factors. The user's attention is still extremely precious, and so in Jelly Bean, we really tried to bring you new tools to help manage the user's attention in a conscientious way. To get the user's attention, now we have priority to show the most urgent things first, not just what's most recent. To use the user's attention once you've got it, we've got these big notifications to provide additional detail whenever the user wants them to be able to just on-demand expand them. And then finally, we've got these notification actions that provide a great platform-themed way for the user to take action right from the notification panel and get back to what they were doing. And with that, I will hand it back to these guys. Honestly, I was really worried that I was going to have to follow the Chet and Romain show, but they had to follow skydiving, so this wasn't so bad.
Thank you, Dr. Dan. So we mentioned a few talks in the process of the presentation. I'll call your attention to a few of them. Obviously, there's a ton of great sessions about all kinds of technologies this week, including a ton of great sessions about Android. This is just a small sample. I wanted to call attention to the ones that are specifically talking about Jelly Bean-related features. There's the Media Codec presentation talking about low-level codec access. There's the Android Fireside Chat this afternoon where they'll answer random questions and probably not answer some random questions. There's the accessibility talk also this afternoon. There is what's new in Android developers tools. Go there if you want to find out much more information about the tools stuff that we touched on very briefly. We're doing a presentation, Romain and I are doing a presentation tomorrow afternoon for Better or Worse, where we talk about all kinds of geeky graphics stuff. And finally, doing more with less. Jeff Sharkey has given a talk where he'll demonstrate SysTrace. He'll talk more about RenderScript compute and taking advantage of the platform to do more with less. And thank you for coming.